continuing figure on this series of forums, focus on city slums. Otherwise, the personnel is rotating. Perhaps you would wish also the continuing figure would be discontinuous, but for better or for worse, I'll welcome you. And this is the fifth in our series of nine, of more than halfway through what is turning out to be, I think, a very varied and interesting program, and on a burning topic and a serious problem that is concerning all segments of our society. These are well publicized. We had five announcements and plus one editorial, and I think you know the area we want to focus on today. I like this series personally because the planning committee, largely students, insisted that we get someone from all segments of the so-called power structure or from the various segments of our society interested in and related to and working on this problem. I came to appreciate that in Chicago, particularly on my sabbatical. I worked for a housing committee of a local church which was under a community organization. In about 9 months, it came very much home to me that you have to know the legal structure, you have to know the political structure, you have to know the business community, particularly the lending institutions who have something to say about housing, the civic groups, the educational groups, community organization groups, the homeowners groups, neighborhood improvement organizations, absentee owners, and you have to know the real estate group. And since I was identified with the poor and a poor neighborhood at first, the real estate group, they were the bad guys. I'll tell you, that was my first impression. They were the bad guys. And I found a lot to document this. I went down to court and heard a lot of things. And we took on some slumlords. And I saw some blockbusters in action out in the West End as the Negro Ghetto moved west. And I heard hearings about restricted listings and so on. But Urban Training Center insists that we hear all sides. And I also came to appreciate that the real estate men also have a side. And that I sat down one Saturday all day in a planning session, or an issues analysis session, and some very dedicated, able real estate people showed the complex situation that they faced and helped me to appreciate that they also want to render service, many of them, and to do a decent job. But they're completely frustrated by a whole set of circumstances. And when I went out and tried to organize a tenant training group in one, on the West End, I saw what they were talking about. So I also saw there's some good guys out there working on this problem, too. Well, in this series, then, we've had the legal segment heard, urban renewal heard, public housing heard, war on poverty heard, and coming up, we've got model cities, churches, industry and business, and the political segment, and today, in between, someone from the real estate board, Mr. Harold Lazaroff, from the Mickelson Realty Company, Vice President of the Real Estate Board of Metropolitan St. Louis, and Chairman of their Housing Committee, or Property Management Committee. The panelists, you know, they have met Mr. Lazaroff, he knows them now, so we will proceed with the questions. Who wants the first one? For Mr. Lester. Ron?
Perhaps you could start by explaining, first of all, what the real estate board does, and then what you, as chairman of the property management committee, what you will do.
The real estate board of Metropolitan St. Louis is a trade association. members, its prime function is to protect the public for our real estate transactions and to govern the transactions of the realtors amongst themselves. function is to handle problems that may come up within the city and county, in housing problems, legislation regarding housing problems, in the operation of housing, and I would say in most cases this would be multiple family housing. If it got into single family housing, I don't think it would be in our department.
What is, you mentioned the ethical code, exists for this board. Having to work between the two poles, I'm sure of profit motivation and yet an awareness of the problems of our society today. How do, well,
mortgage and you feel that the property, that you may be sued for deficiency, then you'll stick with that property as long as you possibly can if you're a financially responsible person. If you're not, you'll walk away from it. Or you'll tear it down to save taxes and save loss and have a piece of ground hoping someday somebody will put together a new project and we'll be able to sell the ground. So the rehabilitation of property is dependent upon the things I mentioned, the ability to borrow money, the ability to get insurance, plus one more ability, the ability to have confidence that you will be able to get the rent needed to carry the new project, because you're going to have to get a higher rent in order to carry the new mortgage, which is based upon the increased money put into the project.
Well, there are some really bad apartments. How can the landlord expect people to pay high rent for them for buildings whose condition is not livable?
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that they will have to pay higher rent if it is rehab, if it is brought up to higher standards than it is presently. Now, presently, today, if a building is untenable, you'll find that it will be pretty much vacant. And you'll find that the only people living in a very, very poor building are people who can't do any better, that they have no financial ability to pay more rent or financial stability for somebody to take them into another place.
What you're saying, in effect, is that in fairly substantial neighborhoods, rehabilitation may be an option.
That's
in the neighborhood that needed work, it's a dead issue.
That's right. That's right. Unless it is handled through some of the government lending programs, such as 221D3 rehab jobs, which even those are difficult to get put through, very difficult. Unless there's something new that will come out where people will be able to borrow the money and get the insurance necessary to satisfy the lender, and the ability for the tenant to pay, then you're not going to get it.
Charles?
Follow up on this a little bit then. Is sort of the trickle-down theory you pointed to that of housing, or in other words, new housing is for upper-income people, and rehabilitated-type housing is for, you know, those who, or at least the housing from which the former occupants have moved is for the lower-income group, and consequently, sort of this, is that an assumption underlying when you say the real estate enterprise at the moment?
I don't say that's an assumption, that's a reality. This is what happens. It's not, you mentioned blockbusting, so forth. You know, the worst thing that an owner of real estate wants is to have his property changed, because his values start to shrink. The value of properties in the West End of St. Louis shrunk at least 50% in the last 5 years, in some cases more. They've shrunk below the mortgage.
But isn't it, let me read a quote and I'll relate this. I don't want to say this myself. A comment about, it says, the brokerage industry is business antiquity in its finest hour. Absorbed with the task of professionalizing their group, brokers have failed completely to consider the possibility of influencing aggregate family movement and thus their own incomes by new and imaginative sales techniques. Now, that's a criticism of sort of, you know, you're not flexible. You've got an established sort of antiquated type of philosophy. Now, you can respond to that in a moment, but related to the West End, for instance, where it probably, this wouldn't have happened if the housing that had been rehabilitated would now be occupied by a little higher income group. I mean, it seems that, you know, this trickle-down effect indeed has taken its case, but could indeed your real estate enterprise by a little more, what shall we say, imaginative or innovative type of marketing influence it to some degree? You see that?
No, I don't. I don't. Because I take a building of equal age, of equal maintenance, in one part of the city, where the rents are the same as they were in the West End of the city. thing to generalize, and I realize that. And I don't mean to generalize, really, but when getting a question at a level, you have to generalize. And I'm not speaking to all people in this way. I myself don't feel that this is certainly the fact, but when a large movement of people came into an area, this is what happened. And it was not because the real estate industry wasn't prepared to keep their property up. Those properties were kept up. Those properties were in as good a shape as any property that you would walk into today and say, yes, these are in good shape.
I don't think that's, I might even agree with you. I don't have a sociological framework. The people, but what I'm questioning is not that they weren't, you know, at one time of comparable quality, the South and West End houses were not of comparable quality, and then a different group of people moved in. Indeed, I think, but the point that I'm trying to stress, you shouldn't, isn't this, you know, you're saying, where can we, you started out by saying, where can the real estate people dig into this? We don't really know where to grab on, right, along with a lot of other people. Now, I'm suggesting that perhaps this might, in other words, I'm suggesting that instead of saying these rehabilitated houses or the houses that they are now should be given over to the next economic group as they come in, a group that's going to say, well, sure, we know we're going to get still trickled down further. We aren't going to be here too much longer. We're insecure, so there isn't a lot of point in investing in property and so on. Wouldn't it rather be, I'm suggesting it, maybe what apparently is an innovative type idea, that the new housing, instead of being for the upper income groups, the real estate group should promote, market some kind of new housing for low-income people, and they can feel secure that they're going to be able to be here for a while. They won't get pushed out. And then this rehabilitated type housing, as I hear from some people who do live over in the West End, there's some remarkably, for not big families, five, seven, eight kid families, but as this group tends to be, so you get a higher density that moved in, but it could have been rehabilitated and renovated for the class of people that were there. For instance, compare the brownstone in New York, that sort of thing. This would be perhaps something constructive that the industry could do.
I would think this. I would agree with you generally, but I think you'd find that we're living in a free democratic society where people are going to go where they think it's the right place for them to go, and there's a terrific push for ground in the West County of St. Louis because that's where they want to go. You can buy ground in the suburbs, develop housing south and north much cheaper than you can west. Who knows? You know what I mean? This is an address means something. This is what we've had many, many years of our society. We've lived through this, where there is prestige in where you live. I don't know how we're going to get around that. I don't know how we're going to force people to live in certain areas without glamorizing them in some way to make it appealing. And with that problem and the social problem, which is very difficult to solve, that's our dilemma.
But you do see it.
I see your point. I see your point.
Possibly you could glamorize it. I mean, the real estate industry using its marketing, its sales ability.
They could, but all right, let me answer your question a little better. Who's going to pay for that new housing for the lower income people? It costs as much dollars to build, even if you don't build luxury. It costs you pretty much money to build today. And ground costs you money. So how are you going to come out unless somebody subsidizes it? Now, if you want to do that, rent subsidy, fine. They're talking today about turnkey housing in the county. They want to get some turnkey housing projects in the county. It'll be very interesting to see where they're going to build them. Because whatever they're going to want to build them, there's going to be a big meeting, and there's going to be a lot of noise about it.
Mayor? They really haven't solved the problem yet. Maybe it's insoluble. Low-cost housing, have they?
Not really.
You're still talking $12,000 to $15,000,
right,
even without land.
Right.
For anything that's reasonably adequate.
So it has to be subsidized. In other words, somebody's got to hand out some money to make up the difference.
Now, the Fair Presbyterian Church has taken
I would say you're on the right track. We were talking about this recently with the low-income housing panel, and pretty much everybody's opinion is you can take an area that's somehow designated small, but has something major, a church in the area, or a school in the area, something that's identifiable as an area. Perhaps it should be two or three blocks. Concentrate in that area, come up with a plan, have an architect work with you and devise a plan. What should be rehabilitated, what should be knocked down, and perhaps what should be rebuilt. This is just a small scale urban renewal plan is what it would amount to. And I think that this is the answer to our problem. And I think if you took one and the other, if somebody else took one and you had them scattered, I think before you know it, there would be some cross lines in those little areas whereby some of that would come by private people. Like, but we'd have more courage to go into those cross line areas and do the remodeling. We might go back to what we used to do, buy a house, fix it up, get a loan, put it on the market, retail it. That's what this real estate business would have been. And I think we would have, first of all, a mortgage man would be behind it. He'd say, yes, I'll loan you money. The insurance man would say, I'll write the insurance. And therefore, all we had to do was have the know-how to fix it up and come out with a profit, so the reason for us to go into it. So I think that the nonprofit people, as you say, may be the start of some of these renewal programs.
Ron? You said that your board supported minimum housing laws in the city. Why do you think that these laws aren't being enforced? And maybe what is your group, what kind of a disciplinary action can your group take against people who
I think they are being enforced. In cases where they're not being enforced, the answer is this, that if they are enforced, then the building has to come down. In other words, if the building is not economic, if it's not economically feasible to spend the money it takes to do what is necessary, then the man don't spend it, he knocks it down. So the city has a choice. They've got thousands of buildings today that are boarded up that they don't have the money to knock down. So they'll be adding to that list. Plus, they will be putting somebody out of a unit who does have a roof over his head, and who maybe he's living in a unit that is below standard, but is not unsafe. Now, if it's unsafe, I think the city, no question about it, they will be occupied. But if it's a place that doesn't have screens on the window, or has some illegal plumbing connection, perhaps has some illegal wiring connections.
Well,
follow me, if you have to spend as much money to rehabilitate it to the point where the building is no longer economically operable, you don't do it. Unless you have, there may be one in a thousand where somebody would have a feeling for a building that they want to keep, and they have to do it, and they've got the money, and they do it. But anybody who looks at a cold business and says, I'm not going to put any more money into it.
Well, we heard last week this person that there were children dying and people breaking legs, and really, to us, terrible things were happening in houses that people were paying rent for, but that were in terrible condition.
I would say that the city inspectors, if they're not doing anything about it, they're not doing their job.
Yeah,
there is a certain amount of problem with the number of inspectors with the number of violations as far as getting around to it. But I think eventually, if these conditions exist, the party who is involved will have to make repairs and will have to take care of the property, or else take it off the market by boarding it up or wrecking it, one of the two. Now you'll find isolated cases. I mean, after all, you'll find, I'm not even saying to you that maybe the tenant chopped the hole for himself. I don't necessarily mean he did that. But you'll find, I mean, if you want to give isolated cases where people living like this, I'm sure you're correct. There are people. The question is why or wherefore. I know this, that in the areas that are old buildings, Ken Brown, the city building inspector, is a building inspector, has said many times, these are not code enforcement areas. And he stays out of those areas unless he has a hazard condition. If he has a building that has a hazard condition, they go right in there and Well, I've got a code of ethics. There's many, many parts. I happen to look at one here that perhaps may be in line with our province. It says, in relations with the public, this is the reason that the realtor could be expelled. Are, says the realtor should not be instrumental in introducing into a neighborhood a character of property or use which will clearly be detrimental to property values in that neighborhood. Really a lot of garbage. I mean, I'm not knocking my code of ethics, but I'm saying that how are we going to enforce something like that? I mean, you know, what is he bringing into this? He's got zoning to comply with in the city of St. Louis. He's got minimum standards to comply with in the city of St. Louis. What could he introduce into a neighborhood to give us cause to do this?
So we brought this out, draw you into this. Any comments or rung the bell? All right.
Well, you go back years and years. I would say that last year we had two dismissed, and the dismissal was mainly for unethical practice in dealing with money. You understand what I mean? Not properly dispersing money to proper parties, which is really more of a need of our organization. See, the people are represented in the closing of a loan or a sale, whereby you'll know that you'll get your money if you won't abscond with the money. This is really one of the purposes of control by our industry.
That's more demonstrable and enforceable than the other.
Yeah, this is very intense. Well, these are suggestions. I mean, that's a definite reason.
All right.
You were talking about areas of the city where you have very, very old buildings, and you can set people in and say, well, and you really can't expect these to come up to minimum. When landlords in other parts of the city who own all old buildings, here this, you know about this, what keeps them from letting their buildings go into such a condition whereby the city inspector did come in and say, well, look, this building isn't really worth fixing, we can't bring it up to minimum standards. So just leave it alone and let you find that answer.
All I can tell you is that the book, the law is on the books. And that's no defense for me who owns it. If I own a building in an area where they're enforcing it, I have to abide by that law. I can't say you didn't do that to so and so in another area. I have to abide by the law. So I have to go along with it. Now, at any time, the mayor or someone pushed the building commission's office. Kim Brown has been under attack many times. And he's come right out and said, You want me to go into these areas and inspect these buildings? We'll do it. I mean, it's just a matter of practical. That's a practical approach. If they do inspect them, you'll find that most of these buildings will have to come down. Now, I don't know whether you realize what building you're talking about. I mean, there are certain areas that are scheduled to be something be done, so the car. These are the areas I'm talking about. I'm not talking about West End, West End rehabilitation area, but that's under control. They're enforcing through most of the city. There's only small portions. Don't get the wrong impression that, you know, if they are enforcing through the major parts of the city, there's certain areas that they have scheduled. They say, well, something's going to be done in this area, something's going to be done in this area. And the buildings are very old. The only time we go in there is when there's a hazard, and we start enforcing.
Paul?
You stated that in an area like the West End, there really isn't any profit in there for the real estate man or the property owner. If you talk to a man like O.C. Pastor, the Mid-City Community Congress, he says that the landlords are just milking the people off these buildings and really are running away with some fantastic profits because they're charging $9,800 a month for just knocked-down buildings and apartments. So would you comment on this? Are the landlords really making good-sized profits in these areas?
Mr. Pastor is saying things in fact, which he does. He didn't give you buildings out of the way for redevelopment, which maybe is one way of doing it without going through a urban renewal like a Mill Creek. People didn't like Mill Creek because it knocked down too many buildings at one time. But this will do the same thing. Unless it can be passed on to the consumer. I mean, any kind of an increase in real estate, he has to pass it on to the consumer, or he has to reduce some of the services he gives. The steel companies, they pass it on. The automobile companies pass it on. We're in the business like anybody else. And yet, people expect us to keep rents low when everything else around us is up. So something's got to give. Yeah?
Yeah. When I use my listing in real estate, people advertise in the paper or something. Usually, always, you know, always upper or middle income housing, people like that. I'm concerned about the lower income housing. And thankfully, as I mentioned earlier, there is only a property that's really been paid for. So, my question concerns the tax incentive approach. Is this will be a new approach by making the tax incentive that will result, hopefully. Also, my question is, do you think that it'll be profitable enough, this tax incentive approach, to really help the poor in their housing?
What tax incentive approach are you referring to?
I believe the tax incentive approach, which is going to be given to those who work in the area of building new housing for the poor.
You mean give them a tax break, a real estate tax, a municipality tax, or an income tax?
Property
tax.
Using the Missouri Redevelopment Act.
You mean under urban renewal?
Yeah, giving you a tax write-off for 25 years.
I think this has to help. I don't think it's going to make any big mark unless you go into multiple dwellings. I don't think anybody would build a house on a lot to replace an old house with the tax incentive is the reason, because it's not enough. Enough involved. A house pays $250 for $300 taxes, so you're going to cut that down to maybe $100, $100 and a quarter. I don't think that's going to help too much in a house. But I do think in a bigger project where you might build some high rise or some garden apartments, $100, $200, $300, I think that is, I'll put it another way, I think that the Urban Renewal Act is not, the taxation portion is not important. The most important thing is the ability to acquire ground and do what you want to do. If I wanted to build a project and I wanted to go out and build it on where there's a bunch of old houses, I could work a year or two trying to acquire all those properties and maybe never acquire them all. Somebody in the state would hold me up, or some little guy there, a little shack who maybe is $3,000 come and ask Kent when he finds out that the big real estate man is somebody in the area. It's difficult to acquire ground. Under the urban renewal law, the condensation blighted areas, you can do that. So you can get the ground to build it. And this is the biggest factor, not the tax. Tax is only a little piece of it.
Professor Klein, did you
have a question?
What
about
1 third
that would walk around a neighborhood like this and see very few black faces? Do you think that the open housing is a lot of concern today?
You mean our problem is in housing? I can't quite get the question.
Why do you find that there are very few black people in the neighborhood?
Oh, okay. Well, I think a certain amount of it was there wasn't an open housing law. The Jones versus Mayer case is only a year old or less. The laws of the land, they're only a year or so old, and I don't say now, I mean, I think it would be an unfair question as to why it is now. I think the answers are very obvious why they're not now. You all, you people sitting here are the reason, the country's the reason certain things weren't done. Whether legislation is going to solve the problem, we don't know. But we're living with open housing. We treat everybody equal. It'll take a while for this thing to be noticeable.
Invest
invest in businesses that way.
No, but you do usually set aside, most businesses set aside a certain amount for maintenance of the building. So like there isn't a period where it rapidly deteriorates and then suddenly...
But you know what I'm saying? I'm saying the building didn't, physically the building didn't deteriorate from 150,000 to 75,000.
Just the value.
Value has deteriorated to 75,000.
But even if...
But he's got no incentive to start putting 50 back in. Now maybe it wasn't him all those years. There may have been a succession of owners. He may have only owned the last 3 years. His ability to put 50, even if he had it, he has to look at it as an investment, doesn't he?
Let's time we have the last question or two. I cut you off before we opened it up.
I'm used to that when you
are. That's a very interesting point you made at the end. Now. I live in a home which I can't afford to maintain the way I would like to, not because I haven't got the money. Do you see in your realtor's board either a kind of a, let me use the word, moral leadership developing, which I gather from your comments is not there now? Do you see this developing? And secondly, do you see the board itself becoming a power of some sort? Again, I gather from your remarks that it really is not power of any sort to achieve a kind of substantial benefit, or try not to use the word profit.
Well, let me back up a little bit. I would say in the last 3 years we have got onto the wagon as far as doing something. We are going to do something. We do have the power. The question is where do we go? How many people are willing, of our members, willing to put in the necessary time and effort to do this. I can only say to you this, we don't have the answers now, only because the answers are difficult. And we're going to be working, we're going to put forth a lot of effort. Our board in the last 2 or 3 years has changed. It's taken on a much younger approach. People who are not on the board anymore are on the board of directors who go back 20 years and look at the situation where we have open eyes, we're looking at the thing practically. We hope to come up with a solution. All I can say is at this point, I can't see the solution, but I'm not alone.
Next week, we hope to have Margaret Bush Wilson from the Model Cities Agency and continue the series. Thank you very much, Ezra. Someone wanted to make a 30-second announcement about voice. Please, would you listen to a 30-second commercial?
Very brief. From that. Okay. Another issue of education, remember how the campaign said for it open this Sunday, 5:00 p.m.
Thank you, panel. Thank you all for coming. See you soon.